Before we move on to my main article, I just, like, the amount of tripe that's been spilt since the Queen died has been, like, worse than a slaughterhouse around here.
Right.
My particular favourite was on the day of, when they had Nicholas Winchell, the BBC's royal correspondent, talking to, I think it was Hugh Edwards, and he said, "There are just no words to describe how this feels at the moment. The Queen has died." And I thought, hang on a minute, this has been your job for the last 50 years.
Like, yeah.
As a journalist, you should be finding the words to... This wasn't unforeseen. She was going to die. Everyone dies. That's how it works.
It's the circle of life.
Immortal.
Yeah, it's... I mean, you remember to bring your black suit to the... to the office that day, just in case it happened. So,
yeah, you would have thought you could have prepared a little bit better than I can't possibly explain this. Well, I can, and I don't have that job. So, like, what? Unbelievable!
Unbelievable. That's yeah. No words for that. But I feel I kind of, although Will, I kind of feel like that's like we should put at the start of this. So, do you want to hear the music?
Yeah, sure.
Welcome to the Gaps in Knowledge podcast. I'm Reese, and I'm a geographer that knows nothing about history.
I'm Will. I'm a historian who knows nothing about geography.
And in this week's episode, we are doing a royal family special episode for you.
And I do have to point out, nothing that I say in this episode is legally binding, allegedly.
This is going to be exciting. Here we go.
So much trouble.
We can say hello to the ladies and gentlemen, can't we? At least.
We can say hello to the ladies and gentlemen.
Hello to the ladies and gentlemen. No, it's been a while since we've... I feel like it's been a while since we've made a podcast like this, actually. Because you had your episode, I had my episode. We're back to normality. Well, kind of normality, I suppose.
Kind of normality, yeah. And I feel like we've got three things working against us. Number one, it's been a while. Number two, it's quite early on a Saturday morning, which is never the best time of the week for two teachers. And number three, we're so emotionally drained from the Queen dying that, like, I'm barely keeping it together over here.
Exactly. Yeah, it's hard work. It's been an emotional roller coaster. And I've been bunged up. You can probably tell from my nose that it's not a pleasurable experience. So if you hear any sniffles or anything like that, we'll try and edit them out. But if you do hear one, apologies in advance.
Yeah, sorry about that. Nobody needs that.
No, nobody needs that. Not right in their ear hole. Anyway, shall we jump into Misconception Corner?
Let's do it, yeah. And
we have got a theme this week. I think it's an appropriate theme as well, considering what's happened in the UK over the last week and a half. So my question to you is, Will, and I'm worried about this question because I think you know the answer to this instantly, but how many GCSEs does the Queen have?
Oh, dear. Guess what my number time's about.
That was going to happen at some point, wasn't it?
It was going to happen at some point. All right, well, let's merge the two.
Let's do it. Let's have you know a chat what?
Funnily
about
enough,
it.
So my theme this week is all getting to know the new king. So I looked at how many GCSEs the king has.
Ah.
But in my research, I don't think I actually came across how many the queen has. So I'm not sure.
Oh, really? So it does work then? Because yeah, I've got Prince Charles statistics. I did it the other way around. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then it does work then. I won't talk about Prince Charles. I've got some stuff about Prince Charles, but I've got a little bit. So
King Charles, surely.
Yeah, well, yeah, King Charles. I'm still catching up. I am still emotionally drained. I'm trying to get things in order, okay?
You could get shot for that kind of thing these days.
I know, I've got to be careful. Even here in Germany, possibly still getting shot.
Exactly.
Okay, would you like to hazard a guess then?
Yeah, well, so I know that she was raised in quite a weird way. She had a governess or a governor, but, and I also happen to know it wouldn't have been GCSEs, it would have been O-levels. But I don't know. I mean, like, on average, as I'll tell you in a bit, they're not the most educationally accomplished family. So I would say like 3 or 4.
Okay, 3 or 4. Well, her Queen Majesty, or back then Princess Elizabeth, has never actually sat an academic exam in her life.
Right.
So the answer to that question is zero.
Zero GCSEs or O-levels. Wow.
No, not a sausage. Not a sausage to show for it. So just to sort of clear this up, the Queen was homeschooled by a governor. A governess, which I think you just mentioned. I mean, to be fair, thinking about schooling and timings and how stressed we can get at school, her school days only lasted from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m.
What? Okay.
Yeah, right. And as a child, but following the sudden abdication of her uncle, King Edward, the Alcor Roman numerals, VIII. This is right. I'm really bad at this. I was going to say eight. Damn it. Oh, crap. Following the sudden abdication of her uncle, King Edward VIII in 938, the palace quickly made preparations for Elizabeth to receive lessons and constitutional history from the vice provost of Eton, Henry Martin, in preparation for her future role as a monarch. So scrap the GCSEs. Let's teach you about royal history and monarch history so you can be preparing to be eventually the Queen of England.
Which I guess makes sense. Like, well, does it make sense? Depends on what your philosophy of education is. If your philosophy of education is just put people in school to get them a job because you're a filthy capitalist, then yeah, that makes sense. But it does also mean that she knows nothing about anything that isn't royal stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say, because I got a professor, someone called Professor Kate Williams, which is an author of Young Elizabeth, said in an interview that the Queen's father had disliked school and her mother thought it was more important to have fun. So,
well, that would be nice.
Right?
Yeah. I'm sure. What a lovely make-believe world they live in. But for the rest of us.
Yeah, right. But apparently he also said, but unlike her father, the Queen was very bright and had an appetite for learning as well as a razor-sharp memory. So right. Maybe it was wasted.
maybe it was.
Shit art. Like.
Yeah, maybe she could have been doing something far more valuable than being the Queen. Who knows?
Possibly. Who knows? But yeah, that was my short misconception corner, which kind of came to a car crash, but then we recovered very quickly. No,
we did. Well, let's keep this car crash going then, because I'm going to go straight to number time instead.
Oh God!
Because it's thematically related, which I think you're going to get in about 2 seconds. But my numbers are 5-0, 2-A, and 2-2.
Okay, so the
done that.
Yeah, I see you've done it. As you've read that, I've literally read that off of my notes as I've gone through that. So I'm assuming that these are King Charles's O-level grades and his degree, which is a 2-2.
Exactly right. Yes, yeah. So he went to a school called Gordonston in the north of Scotland, okay, to the east of Inverness, which he called Colditz in kilts. He hated it there. But he came out all right and ended with 5 O-levels. I couldn't figure out what the O-levels were in. I don't think anybody's recorded that anywhere. But the A-levels, he got a B in history and a C in French, and then he got a 2-2 in history from Cambridge. Now, I didn't know that Cambridge let people in with 1 B and 1 C.
Well, you'd think that they'd have a bit more of a stringent academic process to sort of like cream the top of the top. But maybe if you have connections.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And did you see about the rest of the royal family, how they did academically?
No, so I only got Prince Charles and King Charles, sorry, I need to get used to that. And obviously Her Majesty the Queen. They were the only two. So, but I think I read an article briefly about some of them, but I cannot remember any of it. Unlike the Queen, who would remember all of it, apparently.
Would have remembered all of it. Yeah. So Harry and William both did fine. They both got a couple of A-levels. But Princess Diana, guess how many O-levels Princess Diana left school with?
Oh my God, I imagine she was frightfully intelligent. She's the kind of one that I have like 7 maybe. Oh, I got it the wrong way around.
Absolutely the wrong way around. She failed all of her O-levels twice.
Oh, what, really? What? I can't imagine that. Why can't I imagine that?
Yes.
That's
because you don't have the impression of her as being particularly unintelligent, but then how much intelligence does a job like that actually require?
Oh, that's a fair point.
Not a huge amount. Queen Camilla, however, she did one better than Diana. She got one GCSE, or O-level as it was at the time. But funnily enough, both of them left school at 16, Camilla and Diana, and went to Swiss finishing school.
Aha!
Which sound terrifying. But the idea is turning them into proper aristocratic ladies for a couple of years, because that's the job that they're going to have.
I see.
So that's a more useful way of...
So this is kind of like making sure that you use the right cutlery in the right order at the dinner table. Is that what we're talking about here?
Exactly. Yes, yeah. How to make small talk, how to use the right kind of cutlery, what kind of, how to present yourself, the right titles to use, that kind of thing.
They should see how I eat soup. It's nuts. I'd be kicked out.
Slurping it like a dog, you would. You wouldn't be allowed within 50 miles of Buckingham Palace.
No, they'd still be in the splash zone.
So, I mean, the reason why I found that so interesting is just because, like, you would somehow expect the people who are literally in charge of the United Kingdom to have passed the exams of the United Kingdom, and yet some of them simply didn't. They're just not a smart bunch.
Well, that's the thing, though. How many children would you say you're in charge of?
At school?
Yeah. So,
like 100 a year, roughly.
And how much qualifications do you have to be able to be in charge of those children? Like,
oh, flipping loads. I've got more letters after my name than I've got in my name.
So, but then the royals, the other way around, right? They're in charge of a whole nation, commonwealth. And okay, that seems rather imbalanced.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the only way to get that job is to come screaming out of the right set of genitals, pretty much.
Yeah.
Or kill someone.
Or that. That's also true. Yeah. I just want to say, I realize that obviously people know our theme is going to be royal linked, but like, did they expect us to be like all very like memorabilia and like the vigil sort of episode? Or was
a good point.
We just absolutely hammering them. I don't know.
I mean, they should know by now what they're signing up to by listening to this.
That's a good point. And if anyone's offended by that, it's your problem, not ours.
It is your problem. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what do you get over it by getting in a 20-hour long queue to go and look at a box with a cloth over it in Westminster Hall?
And there's you actually don't know if the Queen is in there or not. She probably is. No. You generally don't know.
Exactly. Schrodinger's queen in the box and not in the box at the same time.
Oh, Schrodinger's queen. It's funny you say
We're never going to be allowed back in the UK.
No, never. That's it. We're barred. Okay, so straight into our main part, Will. I feel like we got there pretty quickly, actually.
We did, and I have a bad feeling that we've both picked exactly the same main topic as well. So,
it's a weird thing in the sense that because I tried to make it as geography-related as possible, probably my misconception corner was the least geography-related. I just... but this one I've tried to make it a bit more geography related, and this is I hope it isn't the same. This is things you didn't know about the Commonwealth.
Okay, right. No, I have not done that.
Okay, fine. Okay. So, I thought it'd be quite good. I've got seven things. I think it's seven things you may not have known about the Commonwealth. And I thought that'd be quite an interesting topic to discuss, because the Commonwealth obviously is linked to obviously the royals and our monarchy. And I thought that would be quite a good introduction to King Charles, because he's got a lot of things that he has to do with the Commonwealth. So if he's listening, we can set him up.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll ask a couple of questions, see what you know, and then we'll go through it. So, number one, how many of the world's global citizens live in the Commonwealth, do you think?
I saw a couple of figures in the newspaper over the last week. It's more than you'd think. We're talking billions, I think. Something like 2 billion or so. Is that right?
You're not far off. It's 2.5 billion people are living in Commonwealth countries. Do you know how many countries there are offhand? That would be impressive if you do that as well.
In the Commonwealth?
Yeah.
No, I don't. It's about 30 or so, isn't it?
56 countries are part of the Commonwealth.
Right. Right.
Which is quite, you know, it's quite a lot of countries. More than 60% of the Commonwealth's population is aged 29 and under, bizarrely. Uh-huh. And globally, a third of all young people between age 15 to 29 live in Commonwealth countries. So I think what they're trying to get at here is a lot of the countries around the world in the who are in the Commonwealth are less developed because they have a larger youthful population. I think that's kind of what that statistic is trying to highlight. And the biggest population in the Commonwealth, I don't know, should I put that as a question to you? You might better work it out, really.
I feel like it has to be India, doesn't it?
Correct. Yeah, it is India, which accounts for half of the total of all population in the Commonwealth. Of course.
Of course.
Yeah. And the other countries which make up the biggest populations are Pakistan, Nigeria, Bangladesh, and the UK, which sits at the fifth, apparently. So, yeah.
And those of you playing Gaps in Knowledge Bingo can cross Bangladesh off your card.
Yes. Oh, yeah, of course.
That is every single episode so far.
Yeah, Bangladesh does appear. We're not for long, though. It's only a meter above sea level. So, sorry, Bangladesh.
Oh, dear.
Okay, number two, as in two things you didn't know about the Commonwealth. That's a really ill-tasted joke, isn't it? That's awful. Oh, I apologise to the
people
of Dakar. We're
going to be banned from Bangladesh as well now. There's so many countries we can never go to. Saudi Arabia, Bangladesh, the UK. Who are we insulting next?
I don't know. I want to say one thing. We're still pretty opened with arms in Tuvalu, though. I'm sure they'll like
Tuvalu,
us there.
We're fine. Oh, I said Australia doesn't have any culture, so we're not going to Oz anytime
soon. Oh, no, Australia. Oh, okay, yeah. We've still got a number of countries to insult. Soon we'll just be strapped to Germany. We've got to be careful there.
We do have to be careful there. No, nothing funny about German history.
No, nothing. Not a single thing.
Nope.
Okay, number two. What is the main criteria for joining the Commonwealth, would you say?
Right. This annoys me, this one, because it used to be you had to be conquered by the British, pretty much, and have the Queen as your head of state. But then some random country started joining the Commonwealth. Like, I think Mozambique is that right?
Yeah, like,
you've so got... what is the criteria? There is no criteria.
The reason that I say the criteria, the bit that you brought up is what I wanted to talk about, because people think that you had to have been colonized by the British to be part of the Commonwealth, but that's not necessarily the case. So as you say, Rwanda and Mozambique became members in 2009 and 95 respectively, and neither of them were colonized by the British.
And the question must be, what the hell are they doing?
Exactly.
What games do you get? You get to go in the Commonwealth Games and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much it. Well, to add to your frustration even further, Gabon and Togo are the most recent joiners in 2022 and they're former French colonies.
They're still joining. What are you... Oh. Maybe they get more access to pork markets.
Pork markets.
That's
it.
Yeah, maybe Liz Truss's new pork market.
Pork markets.
That's what it is. You'll blow. That's quite a specific joke. You have no idea what we're talking about.
If you don't, go and look it up, because the new British Prime Minister is absolutely brain dead. It's hilarious.
Yorkshire tea.
Yeah, she can't even curtsy properly. Have you seen the curtsy she made to King Charles?
I haven't, no. How did she curtsy?
No. It's like she's heading the football back to a goalkeeper.
That is a disgrace.
That's why you need to go to a Swiss finishing school.
But I've got loads of facts here about countries that leave, left and rejoin the Commonwealth. Some are part of the British colony, some were not. And, you know, South Africa didn't join again. So did the Maldives. They left in 2016, came back in 2020. Why can't the European Union be like that? Why can't everyone in the UK go, oh shit, we made a mistake. Can we just come back, please? Seems the Commonwealth is just, the door's open for the Commonwealth. It seems for any fucking country. Like,
yeah, it's like the hokey pokey. One leg in, one leg out. Exactly. Shake your pork all about.
Oh, what? Anyway, on to the next one.
I'm not going to explain that. You can deal with that in your own way.
Fair enough. But I just wanted to bring up the point that the British not being part of the British colonies are still being involved with the Commonwealth. Insane. So, yeah, it is insane.
Because what the Commonwealth seems like is kind of one of those prison rehabilitation schemes where they get the prisoner and his victims to all like go out for dinner and chat and have a nice time. And so Britain can kind of see that Kenya's a real person and get to talk to the Kenyans. So why would you want to join this group of bullied people? Look,
yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense to me either. Like, it's really bizarre. Should I go on to the third one?
Let's see what the third one is. Yeah.
So I haven't actually got a question for this. I gave up just asking questions.
That's the spirit.
So the third one is, the Queen is head of state in only 15 of the countries, or there was the King is only head of state of only 15 of all the countries in the Commonwealth, which I think is a bit... You know, if you join the Commonwealth, surely that's what the head of the monarchy will want to be. Well, I want to be the head of state of your country. That's how I imagined it. But yeah. No, apparently not. So
what are they doing?
I have no idea.
Why would you? What? This makes no sense to me at all.
It makes no sense. No, so most of the Commonwealth states are republics, with Barbados becoming the latest, having removed the Queen as head of state in 2021. This is the other thing as well. Five countries, Lesotho, Eswatini, which was Swaziland, Brunei, Malaysia and Tonga have their own monarchs. So that the Queen isn't head of state of those ones either, which leaves just the the ones that are not republics and do not have their own monarchs, who she's then head of state of, which is 15 countries.
Very, very strange. I don't know why you want to have anything to do with this if you'd had like suffered from multiple famines thanks to British mismanagement.
Yeah.
Very strange.
But all it is just they turn up once every couple of years to do a sports day. And then...
Which is even stranger.
Right?
Let's see which of these countries we bullied into almost non-existence is the best at pole vaulting.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. What a strange world we live in.
It is bizarre, isn't it? Anyway, on to the next one. I've just written number four. It's big. That's what I've written.
Really penetrating analysis we're going for here.
I know, right? I've really been thinking deeply about this. But the Commonwealth makes up a quarter of the world's landmass, which actually is quite a lot, to be fair.
That is quite big.
But that's pretty much down to Canada, I think.
Right.
and then India and Australia are the next biggest ones in terms of landmass. However, it has some of the smallest territorial estates as well, because it has a lot of Pacific Island nations like Nauru, Samoa, Tuvalu. They are Tuvalu, Vanuatu, and Antigua and Barbuda and Dominica in the Caribbean. So not only has it got some of the biggest land masses in the world, it's also got some of the smallest. But it makes up a quarter of the global land mass. Commonwealth. I thought that was interesting. As I say it out, it probably actually isn't.
I guess if we're taking the Commonwealth as a country, it does make Britain the biggest country in the world. So there you go, all you people who are angry with us ribbing on the monarchy. There's your bit of British patriotism. Have that.
Is this the British way of trying to still be like the biggest nation in the world? Is if you join the Commonwealth, we now own you. Is it like sort of like the backhand way of doing it?
I think it might be. Yeah.
But yeah, I think you would know more about the colonization of the countries around the world than I do. But I still think this is one of the backdoor way of doing it. It really is.
Well, especially because you can join out of your own free will.
Like, yeah, that's true. You haven't got to be invaded. Oh, let's hope the British invade us. Like, it doesn't work that way.
So there is nothing, I mean, it's based on a historical thing, but there's nothing particularly historical. There's nothing geographic about it, because it's not like the European Union. We know where Europe ends. Mm. Well, actually, having watched Eurovision this year, apparently Australia's in Europe, and so is Israel. So maybe we don't know where Europe ends.
I've seen a map of Europe when Eurovision happens, and Australia is west of France, and then it moves back, I think, after it finishes.
Oh, okay, I see. Sails over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I could ask a question here, actually, for number five. Out of all the countries in the Commonwealth, which of them have the biggest economy? So we're looking at GDP.
I think India's just overtaken Britain, Maybe. So it's between Britain and India.
You know a lot of stuff. It is India, and they've literally just taken over Britain. So the UK is no longer the biggest economy in the Commonwealth, according to latest GDP numbers from the International Monetary Fund, IMF, with India overtaking it for the first time this year. So the combined GDP... Oh, that's quite... Firstly, so with India, they have... Is it 3.535 billion US dollars? Is that 3.5 trillion, I think that is?
Yeah, 3.5 trillion, yeah.
Yeah, and the UK is 3.3 trillion. So they've overtaken us this year. And yeah, good on them, fair enough. But yeah, so they have a bigger economy than the UK. but the combined GDP of the 56 members of the Commonwealth is $13 trillion. So that's 10.8 trillion pounds, which is twice the size of Japan's economy. but it's still way behind the US GDP, which is $23 trillion.
Wow. That's so quite a long way behind, yeah.
Yeah, so that, I think actually out of all statistics from this one, I think that's the most startling one, is that even with all of the economies of the 56 countries of the Commonwealth, it is still behind the United States of America. So well done, USA. Well done, you.
Congratulations to them. So economically and demographically, India is far, far more dominant than the United Kingdom globally. It's just politically, the UK has the prestige of its history, I guess.
It is, but I would argue, even though the GDP of India is a little bit higher than the UK, its GDP per capita will be significantly smaller as well, because they have such a huge population. Yeah.
I think, though, it should be like as soon as economically you overtake the UK, then that means you get to have the royal family. And so we don't have Prince Charles. We've got the Indian royal family based in Delhi.
Yeah.
I think it'd be more interesting.
I think that would be more interesting. You're right, actually. We've got two more facts left to go, Will. And my first one, number six, do you know the original name of the Commonwealth?
The original name of the Commonwealth? That sounds... Well, to have like a secret mystical name that if you say it, then the whole thing crumbles. What do you mean, the original name?
So the modern name is called the Commonwealth or Commonwealth, but... It had a slight variation in its birth and its beginning, and it's quite simple actually, and it's not that interesting. It was called the British Commonwealth. They dropped the and they dropped the British bit, and they dropped it, I think, in the 60s at some point. But they dropped the British bit of the British Commonwealth
to hide the fact that it was the British Empire reborn.
Yeah, pretty much. So they just got rid of it. Yeah.
Well, maybe the EU should do that, and then Britain would be happy to rejoin instead of being the European Union. Just call it the Union.
Oh, yeah, the Union. Exciting. Yeah. That would work.
Sounds like something out of Star Wars.
Yeah. And I'd be really interested in joining that. I'm also still interested in joining the EU, to be fair, the European Union. Yeah. That's still I'm happy with. But yeah, it's only a short. So it used to be called the British Commonwealth, and then they adopted just the Commonwealth.
The Commonwealth.
Yeah. Or the Commonwealth Charter, I think, was one name in 2012, was a further development of the official Commonwealth name. Yeah, just fancy words that people not really quite sure what they mean. We'll just chuck them in there.
And just pretend that it isn't quite clearly what it is.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not British at all. Look, Togo are involved. Rwanda are involved. Well, then what is it? What are you doing?
Eventually, what you'll have is every country joins. You just have the UN.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh dear. Speaking of other organizations, though, the last one and my final one is this one the only global Commonwealth? Are there other Commonwealths that you know of?
Ooh. Yeah, there are. Some of the states in the US are called Commonwealths.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's new. I didn't find that one.
I think Virginia is a Commonwealth, not a state, technically.
Oh, I see.
Maryland is the same. So it's the Commonwealth of Virginia and the Commonwealth of, I think it's Maryland. I could be wrong, maybe Delaware. Yeah, there's a couple of other Commonwealths in the US.
I'm aware that Delaware is one of the first states of USA, so that might be why. So that would make
sense. Same with Virginia.
Yeah. But that's not the actual Commonwealth that I have here. So I've got, there's two Commonwealths that I found which use the idea of a Commonwealth. There's a Commonwealth of Independent States, which was set up in 1991 by Russia and other former members of the Soviet Union.
Okay. That's slightly worrying.
Yeah, it's terrifying that I didn't know that existed until yesterday or day before.
No, the Commonwealth of Independent States. As soon as you mention Russia, that sounds terrifying.
Yep, absolutely. And when I happened to be looking at this, there's a picture of Vladimir Putin talking to the Belarusian president on a video call whilst they have a meeting of all of these former Soviet states. And just that image alone for me is just absolutely terrifying. Just something about it is just
super independent. Yeah. Well done, Belarus. Good job.
And the other one, which may be more linked to what you know and do, is there's an international organization of La Francophonie, a group of French-speaking countries which aims to promote the French language and increase mutual cooperation. So there's a French-speaking Commonwealth as well that I found. So why Rwanda and Togo are joining the British Commonwealth, I've no idea. They should join that one. What?
They should join that one. I'm sure it's much more cooler. I'm sure it's much cooler.
Yeah, of course.
Like, what would you do in the British Commonwealth? Sit around eating marmalade sandwiches and being miserable?
Yeah, and talk about the weather.
About the weather. What do you do in the French Commonwealth? Have affairs on the back of mopeds.
Yeah, and a small coffee.
And a tiny, tiny coffee. Yeah. Fantastic. Why would you not want to do that?
I think I would prefer to join the La Francophonie. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, you are. La Francophonie, exactly.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It even sounds better.
The Francophones. Right? Yeah.
It sounds like a weird 60s doo-wop band.
It does, yeah. And yeah, they're playing at 4 a.m. or something like that, and it's still...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But they were my 7 things you probably didn't know about the Commonwealth. So, King Charles, if you're listening, hopefully that sets you up quite nicely, I hope, for your new reignship of the monarchy of the UK. I hope so.
That was the most sincere thing that's been said since September the 8th. Well done, you.
Thank you.
So I've called my article Getting to Know You, because how much do we know about King Charles? Well, quite a lot.
Well, I'd like to know more. I know a lot about his fingers.
Which you could fry up and serve in a bun with some mustard and sauerkraut in this part of the world.
Yeah, right.
Crunchy. So he has obviously been heir to the throne for 69 years, which is nice. And he's the first king or queen to ascend to the throne so late in life. In fact, I looked it up from... the first king of England, who was Alfred the Great, until George II. So Alfred the Great died in, what was it, about 890. George II dies in 1760. Every single one of those kings and queens for almost 1,000 years died before 73, which is the age that Charles comes to the throne. So he's older now than the death age of most of the kings and queens of England.
That's some statistic. Jesus
he's
Christ.
An old man.
He retires soon, won't he, surely?
Well, certainly hope so. So, we know quite a lot about him. Like, we know huge amounts about his love life. He's on his second wife. We know that he loves to play polo. Did you know that he likes to speak to his plants in his gardens to keep them calm?
No. Seems like a sane man then. I hope, well, he's got very calming plants.
Yep, absolutely. He has full control of all of his marbles for certain.
Yep. Does he speak to those as well?
But there are some things about the new king that aren't so pleasant. I mean, for example, did you know that he was responsible for orchestrating the murder of his first wife, allegedly?
No, but that sounds...
I'm just going to throw that in there to make my parents angry.
Oh, yeah, okay, because I know who you're referring to as well. Wow, that's a hell of a statement.
Allegedly.
The word allegedly is saving you for any court case there.
Yeah, that's doing a huge amount of work in that sentence. But did you know that he's also a massive homeopath?
No, what?
Do you know what homeopathy is?
It's... You're going to have to explain it to me because there's loads of these. But, no, I don't. Can you go into more detail on that? Isn't that center of the body?
Boy, can I. Yes, it is. It is. So in 2006, Prince Charles, as he was then, went to the World Health Assembly in Geneva, and he said homeopathy is a valid strain of medicine rooted in ancient traditions. I'm quoting his words here, that intuitively understand the need to maintain balance and harmony in our bodies.
Okay, so
I did a big intake of breath then.
That's it. So is this a stuff with like reflexology and all that kind of stuff?
It's not far off, except it's even more stupid.
Yes. Okay.
Let me tell you about the royal family and homeopathy.
I never thought those two things would ever collide, but here we are.
Well, the king is a big advocate, and he's actually sold kind of cures that are based on homeopathy through his Duchy Originals brand that you can get in Waitrose. Queen Elizabeth had a homeopath, and she was a patron to the Royal London Homeopathic Hospital. Her dad was so enamored with homeopathy that he named one of his racehorses after a homeopathic cure. His dad, George V, used homeopathy to treat seasickness. And you can go all the way back 200 years. The British royal family have been massive supporters of homeopathy. The trouble is, homeopathy is pure pseudoscience,
okay,
or, as I would put it, complete and utter bollocks. The basic idea behind homeopathy is it's a kind of medicine, and it was created by a doctor called Samuel Hahnemann over 200 years ago. And he came up with this theory that if a plant or a substance causes a symptom to appear in someone, then it can cure that same symptom in someone who's sick.
Okay.
So, for example, if you have a disease and it gives you rashes, then if you give someone a bit of the plant that gives you a rash, like a stinging nettle, for example, then it will cure that rash. That's the idea.
That's okay. So that's literally really basic. But so I can see the parallel with like a vaccine in that. Like I can see why that thought process might exist. But but vaccines are much more technically and medically more complicated and advanced than all of that stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, a vaccine not far off the same kind of time, Edward Jenner, who was kind of investigating scabs and cowpox. But the idea behind a vaccine is you get somebody slightly sick in order to prevent a much more serious sickness later. This time, this is slightly different. This is, let's say, for example, you eat a plant and it makes you throw up. Well, hang on to that plant, because next time you have an illness that makes you throw up, if you take some of that plant that originally made you throw up, it's supposed to cure the illness.
That's bonkers. That's not how brain logic works. That's not pragmatic.
Nope.
That's nothing of those things.
Nope. No, absolutely not. It's basically saying 1 + 1 = 0.
Yeah.
Well, no, 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah, that's...
It's not. It doesn't make any sense on any level.
And he believes in that tripe.
They really flipping love it. They support it. They're patrons of homeopathic hospitals. But it gets weirder than that. So the founder of homeopathy, Samuel Hahnemann, realized that if you're giving a sick person something that makes them sick, they're going to die. It's a stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
So he came up with the idea of diluting it. So you take a bit of the substance and you add water to it, and that makes it more palatable. But the way in which homeopathy dilutes stuff is absolutely ludicrous. Samuel Hahnemann says that 30C is the perfect dilution. Let me tell you what that means. 1C means that you take one part of the original substance, say 1 milliliter, and then you add 99 milliliters of water. So now you've got 100 milliliters.
Right, okay.
Of which it's 1% original substance.
Okay.
That's 1C. 2C is you take 1 milliliter of that new substance and dilute that to then get 100 milliliters of a new substance.
Oh, okay.
At which point we're down to 0.01% of the original substance. If you do it 12 times, then in 100 milliliters of water, you have one single molecule of the original substance left. And that means that it's diluted so that you've got one, like the smallest amount that is physically possible left. That's 12C.
What's 30?
30C then this is good. This is a little bit complicated to explain, but let me tell you. So a 12C, you're looking at basically the amount is a single pinch of salt in the entire Atlantic oceans, north and south. That's how much of the original you've got left. That's at 12. At 30C, to find one molecule, one the smallest physically allowable amount left, one molecule, you need to have 2 billion doses of the medicine given to 6 billion people every single second for 4 billion years in order to find a single molecule.
That's so insane.
It's bollocks.
That's not medicine.
That's not how it works, no. And there's other kind of mental like descriptions, which is like at 15C, you've got to drink a whole swimming pool to find a single molecule left of the original stuff. And it's nonsense. So how do they explain this nonsense? Well, they say that if you shake the water, then it gives the water memory. And it's that memory that kind of vibrates on the frequency of the original substance. And the original substance wasn't even curing you in the first place. It was making you more sick.
Can I just say right now, like, I know that we're called gaps in knowledge, but I sometimes feel like I need to take something out that's taken up too much memory here now. And I think this might be one of them. Like,
this like, might well be.
But me knowing that, I don't know how much hard drive I have left in my head, but I'm worried that that's now taken up some of that space, which, you know, is nice to know, but that's it.
Yeah. I mean, the way that I kind of think of homeopathy is, you know those videos of like, you, it looks like a book, but you slice into it and, oh, it's cake. It looks like an apple, you slice into it. Oh, no, it's cake.
Yeah.
Those videos on the internet. Yeah. This is like that, except it looks like a dog shit. And then you slice into it and it turns out it's just a dog shit all the way down. It's nonsense.
It's the same shit all the way through.
It very much is. And so they have this idea that the more you shake it, the more memory it has. And so Dr. Samuel Hahnemann built a special saddle that would shake his fluids more the more he rode around the German countryside to activate water memory. Now, I hope this goes without saying, ladies and gentlemen, but water cannot have a memory because memory is a faculty of consciousness and water isn't conscious. but this is actually a bit more of a serious problem than just, oh, what a bunch of idiots, because the thing is, this is quite a popular cure around the world. In the UK, there are about 1,000 registered homeopathic doctors. And by registered, I mean they're on the NHS. And you can get homeopathy on the NHS.
No. Yes. What? No.
Something that made me genuinely quite concerned is that in Germany, in 2014, a survey found that 60% of the population had tried homeopathy in their lives.
Wait, that's an alarming amount anyway. But please, at least some of those people must be doing it because they just want to find out what it's all about. And then they go, oh, shit, what am I doing? Like, I want that to happen.
Yeah, because about 43% didn't know what homeopathy was.
Okay.
When they tried it.
So they went on an exploration.
Only 70% knew how it worked.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. But the problem is with that is that the people who are going on this exploration are people who need medical help. And so every now and then in the newspapers, a case will crop up of somebody who had perfectly treatable diseases who died because they refused that and went for homeopathy instead.
Oh, God.
It's a scam. It's a complete scam because what you're giving people is water. It's pure water. It's never been anything but water.
That's just
everything's
insane.
It's like the second dilution.
If I'm sick, I go to the doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, that is really easy to remember. I had gout recently. I went to the doctor and then,
get a bottle of water and shake it for its memory.
Yeah. Because if someone says that to me, I say, what sort of institution have you been escaping from to tell me that information? Go back to your mental home. Like that, if someone says that to me, like that is not. That's like a quest in a video game. That's it. That's all that is.
And it's so easy to disprove as well, because if you think about it, if water had a memory, then water purification plants wouldn't work because all waters pass through human beings at some point. So if as soon as you shake a bottle of Evian, it starts telling you about that time it was pissed out into a gutter, like it's quite clear none of it works.
And yet,
the Queen was a patron of hospitals. The King is patron of homeopathic hospitals. And he has sold it. So to be fair, he didn't sell specifically homeopathic cures, but he did sell homeopathic adjacent cures. Health medicines based on flower oils and nonsense.
It's just mad, this, right? So what? There's two things here, and it's the one. What it sounds like, a lot of my mates and I, when we play video games with each other, we have a constant ongoing joke where if we say something which links to the video game, and then we take it out of and put it into the real life context, it's like we're in a mental institution. And saying something like, "Oh, we need to get memory for our water," is a genuine thing we could say whilst playing an RPG game. But then
that is very much so.
But then the other thing is that our king now believes in this bollocks.
Yep.
Oh my God, okay.
Yes, he very much does. So, I mean, that's what you get if you only do 2A levels and 5O levels. None of them are in biology.
That is, there you go.
So, so that's the new king, ladies and gentlemen. He might well be richer than you. He might be far more powerful than you can ever dream to be. And he might have so many palaces that he needs more than his 10 sausage fingers to count them all. But at least you're not a snake oil salesman. And at least you didn't probably murder your first wife, allegedly.
Allegedly. Jesus Christ. Okay, so we're going to go into number time, but it's the weird bit where I say number time, but you will do your misconception corner because our facts collided. It only took 11 episodes. But our facts did collide. Yeah. Okay, so my number time this week is, unsurprisingly, the royal family. And 71.5
million. 71.5
million.
Okay. That's not far off the population of the UK. That's somewhere around that amount. So I'm going to say, but then I suddenly thought of coins, but no, there's far more coins than that in the UK. I have no idea. Can I get a clue?
I've got an extra clue, and it might sort of like narrow it down a little bit. The clue is income.
Income. Okay. Right. Is that how much income that comes from, say, the Crown Estates?
Oh, it's an interesting idea. So it's not exactly right, but I think for what you said there is there were pretty some strands there which are true. But essentially, directly from the brand, which is the royal family, including tourism, that's how much money it makes a year, £71.5 million. So this is what we're talking about here is how much tourism money does the royal family bring into the UK, essentially. Mm-hmm. Now, the number 71.5 million is, I say it's direct. So it literally is through the actual royal family brand, like tickets for gates, Windsor Castle and all that, and Frogmore House and so on. There is indirect, which I will go on to in a little bit, but just to put some figures out there. So the royal family earns hundreds of millions for Britain's economy each year, with Windsor Castle and Frogmore House recording roughly 426,000 paying visitors between April 21 and March 22, so pretty much a full year. An adult ticket costs, by the way, to go into these places, £26.50 from Sunday to Friday.
God,
that's a lot of money, actually. It's a lot of money. But other royal tourist destinations such as Buckingham Palace, the Royal Mews, Clarence House, the Palace of Holyrood House, and the Queen's Gallery also generate significant revenue. But as well as generating income for ticket sales, because that's why I said it's like direct. This is what the slight difference is, a direct and indirect. So instead of generating income for ticket sales, the various landmarks also sell souvenirs, trinket hampers, and publishing as well as a Christmas hamper, all this kind of like royal junk. I think I will use that word. But all of that added together is roughly about £71.5 million in all. However, the reason I say that's direct is one of the things, obviously, if people come in to visit London and to see royal stuff, they then have to spend their money for restaurants, spend their money for hotels and travel and so on. So actually, it's estimated that it contributes about £2.5 billion to the British economy in the same time frame of a year. Okay. And the UK's taxpayer, to keep the royal family afloat, I use the word afloat, is £500 million a year. So that's, you know, in terms of a tourist economy, people could sometimes argue that, oh, it's quite good for tourism and it does bring in, as you know, what's it, overall gross $2.2 billion pounds a year. Mm-hmm. But that's, I'm just literally going down the tertiary industry here, nothing else. Mm-hmm. So indirectly, I suppose if you take off the UK taxpayers' money, the British monarchy earn for the country £2 billion a year in tourism.
Do you think that's a good justification for the monarchy?
Absolutely not. I don't think it is, but it's a justification.
It's a justification. Yeah. Yeah. No, you often hear that as kind of the argument, well, why do we have a monarchy? It's very outdated because it brings in a lot of money. But my counter argument to that is, you know what else brought in a lot of money? Child labor. But we don't send six-year-olds to go make matches anymore for a very good reason.
That's a very good point, actually. It's quite on the nose comparison, but it's a fair point. You're absolutely right. We had a discussion recently about maybe this is the best time for the United Kingdom to become a republic, like end on a high of the monarchy.
Yeah, except it's also absolutely the worst time because, like, the mother of all queues that is taking place at the moment outside of Westminster Hall, snaking halfway around London.
Yeah, right.
Bizarre country.
But interestingly, I read on the BBC News that David Beckham queued up 12 hours to go and see the Queen's casket.
Which might be the most English sentence that's ever been uttered.
Oh, yeah, the Queen.
It just encapsulates so much.
The Queen, David Beckham, queuing.
Mediocre celebrity.
Yeah.
Faded glory.
Yeah.
Funerals. It's so painfully English. You just need him to like start choking on a crumpet or something, and then we've got the whole bingo card sorted.
Oh yeah, that's the only thing that's missing from that. He was wearing a flat cap. But there we go. So
what a country.
But if you ladies and gentlemen want to try and bring the argument of the royal family bringing about £2 billion worth of money each year to the British economy, there you go, you can use it. But it's just a piece of information which we would argue against, but whatever, there it is.
Yeah. And I in the kind of the aftermath of the Queen's death, I did think actually there is an argument to be made here for having an apolitical head of state. For if you want someone around whom the country can rally, then having a political person doesn't work all the time. I mean, look at the United States. Who have they got to rally around?
They can't
rally around their president because half the country doesn't vote for him. And at this point in time, half the country wants him dead. Similar thing in France. In Germany, the head of state, what's his name? Well, exactly. That's the point. What's his name? Like, we have the Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, but who's the president?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Nobody really knows who he is. So having an apolitical point of kind of morale support, that kind of thing. Like in the pandemic when the Queen came out and gave that "we'll meet again" speech.
Yeah.
Could genuinely be helpful.
Yeah, I think so.
But that to me is the best argument for keeping a monarchy at this point in time.
Yeah, I feel like if we end the segment there, then people are gonna be thinking, we love the monarchy, which is another question entirely. I'm just trying to keep it fact-based.
Let me just refer you back to my previous jokes about the fact that the Queen murdered Princess Diana.
There we go.
Allegedly. There
we go. Back on track.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. That's a powerful word. That's a useful word.
Do you know what? I'm really heavily gambling on its power here. It better be powerful.
If this picks up and gets my numbers... Doesn't matter. We live in a different country. Doesn't matter.
If exactly.
They can revoke our passports. We'll just get a German one or you get a Slovakian one. You'll be fine.
It doesn't matter. I'll be fine. Yeah. Feel those greasy sausage fingers extending over over the channel. Don't think so. Should we do my misconception corner?
Yeah, let's go to the misconception corner, which is weird it being the last segment, but the way it's worked out, let's go for it. Fool me once, go.
And hopefully find our way out. So, what's the king's surname?
Oh, for God's sakes. you know I don't know that, and you know I'm just going to say royal, so...
Charles Royal.
Which
incorrect answer I would have accepted is the third.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good one. Mr. the Third. Oh, that doesn't roll off the tongue as well, that one. Oh, I genuinely have no idea.
With the royals, it's pointlessly convoluted. They come from the House of Windsor, okay. So that's their house name.
So they're not called Windsor?
Their surname isn't Windsor.
Why?
No.
Why?
Because it's stupid. That's literally the only answer here.
Okay.
Because it's stupid. Technically, anyone with a royal title loses their surname.
That's also mental.
Yeah, it is. He has no surname. The king has no surname. His name is Charles Philip Arthur George.
Ugh.
That's it.
Like,
I don't know, Madonna or Satan. He has no surname.
And the first two things that came to your head.
and so the same is true of Prince William, Prince Harry. They don't have surnames. Now,
oh, wow.
You might be thinking, if you have as corrupted a memory as mine, or if you're as obsessed with Hello magazine as my mother is, hang on a minute. When Prince William and Prince Harry both served, they had the surname Windsor. Well, they take a surname when they need one for legal purposes.
Okay.
So in the army or in the navy or in the air force, then they are he would be William Windsor. Normally the legal surname is Mountbatten Windsor. Windsor from the Queen, Mountbatten from Prince Philip. And so when they enter into lawsuits, which, for example, William sued a French magazine about 10 years ago because they published topless pictures of Kate Middleton, then he was suing them as William Mountbatten Windsor.
Okay.
Because you have to have a surname for legal purposes. So technically, they don't have one.
But only when it suits them.
Yeah, only when they need one. Yeah, so until September the 8th, Prince Harry's children were called, what are their names? Archie and Lilibet, I think. They were called Archie Mountbatten Windsor and Lilibet Mountbatten Windsor. But since September the 8th, they are Prince Archie and Princess Lilibet.
I see. No surname. That's just pompous.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
What, so
bizarre family.
It's such a weird family that we're so important that we don't have to have a surname. I mean, some of the most, like, there are other important people around the world, and they have to have their surname. Sometimes, like, the most famous people, their surname is part of it. Michael Jackson, for example, that is actually quite a common name to have with many people.
Yeah.
But that is, in its entirety, Jackson makes, everyone knows who that is. But I just find this whole thing about surnames, and that's just mad that they said, no, Prince.
It is. And when you know someone just by their first name, it's normally because their surname's kind of irrelevant, like Madonna or Seal or Jesus. I kind of like the philosophical implication here, which is that he is the Charles, and every other Charles is named in reference to him. He is the most Charles that has ever Charles.
Oh, I didn't even think of that lens. Oh, God, that's even worse. Why did you tell me that?
It is.
Oh, that's just awful.
So if you name your son Charles, it's because you want him to speak to plants and have dodgy dealings with homeopathic medicine.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Oh, God. And it just makes me so annoyed about everything. Oh.
Well, luckily there are no Prince Reeses or King Reeses. I don't think any of the princes of Wales were called Reese.
No, either. Thank God for that.
There's definitely a Prince Will. So
yeah.
What my parents named me after then is what? Like premature balding?
Yeah. Well, that hasn't happened yet, but you've got the beard in preparation.
Just in case.
That's the end of our royal special episode, and I hope I hope that the sniffling didn't bother you too much throughout, and my croaky voice didn't bother anyone. I'm sure it did.
He's just so emotionally cut up about the whole business.
It is. I've had to have a little huge recouping process, but I'm on the mend, I think. When the king's finally in place and everything's running back to normal as they were, we will keep calm and carry on, I think. Sorry, but thank you very much for listening to our episode today. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can find us on @GapsPodcast. And if you search for us on YouTube, we post all our episodes of our podcast there as well.
And if you want to send us a complaint email, then don't. If you want to send us a nice email, then gapsinknowledge@outlook.com. And if you want to find us on Facebook, then just search for Gaps in Knowledge and we shall appear.
And thank you very much for listening to this episode. And I'd like to now actually, genuinely normal service will resume next episode, like genuinely normal service. So,
unless the king dies.
So, okay, that's good.
Who knows?
That's a threat. Okay, well, we'll see what happens. And
Where legally that is not a threat. Legally, I'm not. This is, oh, God, I'm in trouble. Allegedly, let me just keep saying that.
Word of the day, allegedly. We'll see. We'll see you next episode.
Bye.